Welcome to Empowered, Mind Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up.
Welcome, everyone. Today, I've got Lynn Bowman back to share some of her incredible knowledge. Lynn is author of Brownies for Breakfast, a cookbook for diabetics. Lynn took control of her own health 30 years ago and continues to thrive. Sharing her knowledge has now become her passion. Welcome back, Lynn.
I'm so happy to be back with you. You know that. What fun. I love this. And I have some good news for you.
Yeah? Oh, yay.
I do, because I just had my blood work redone. And so I want to share with everybody. I mean, this is medical stuff, but hey, I don't want to keep it secret. My latest test was 6.3. My hemoglobin A1C was 6.3, which puts me almost out of diabetic territory. So I'm putting that information out for all of you who are dealing with type 2 diabetes, your own or someone else's. I'm 76. I'm doing it. You can do it. It's such a miracle to me. Having always been told that this was a progressive disease, it was just going to get worse. Well, guess what? It does get better.
Yeah.
There you are.
Yeah. So, you're living proof. And yeah. That's just through diet, exercise.
Yep. Yep.
Mind, right? Yep. No drugs is what I'm saying. No pharmaceuticals.
Well, except that another interesting twist in my story is I've been working with a friend, Dr. Selma Rashid, in recent months, who is a specialist in hormones. And we have started working together because I didn't know, and I think many women don't know, that bone health and skin and muscle health are closely related to your hormone state. And so we had been sort of led to believe, the publicity was that you can't take estrogen, especially if you've had cancer, that estrogen is a problem. It's not a good thing. So past menopause, nah, you just should. Well, not true. It's a fascinating story about the studies that were done and how they were done and not done and so on, and how the medication was prescribed and compounded and so on. And so Dr. Selma Rashid is about to come out with a new book, and I'm working with her on that. And I think it's really hopeful news for women because, like me, a lot of us want to be out there doing stuff. And the general kind of information was, well, honey, you better be careful because if you break a bone, it's all over, right? You're 76. You break a bone, it's just you're brittle and so on. And you know what? You can build bone and you can build muscle at this advanced age. So I don't have the whole story for you today. I hope in a few months we can talk in more detail about that. But Selma claims that by taking this estrogen and progesterone program, I'm also improving my blood glucose numbers. So I don't know whether it was that as part of it, but I think it's also just generally what I've been doing, and I've kept doing it. And the other thing that I'm doing more than I used to do is intermittent fasting or time-controlled eating, whatever you want to call it, where I go further between meals and I eat fewer meals. And that seems to be a super effective program for a lot of people, not just me. So yes, it's what you eat, which we have talked about and will continue to talk about. It's absolutely what you eat. It's your sleep, and it's when you eat. And I also think it's with whom. I think we do have a loneliness epidemic. I think that's very, very real. There was another big story in the papers this morning about our loneliness epidemic, made worse, of course, by COVID and all that it brought with it. So It's all part of the same thing, but the food is more fun. We can talk about brownies. That's more fun.
Well, it's all interrelated. I think that's the main message, isn't it? It's, you know, to treat a person as a whole person rather than just, you know, blood sugar.
And we know that our medical establishment isn't great, and they will admit this at seeing a whole person in front of them. They're seeing a liver or a heart or, you know, some other organ, but they're not seeing a whole person.
So it's never in one magic pill. Like that's the real message. It's see where your stress levels are, see what's out of whack all the way around. So then just to go backwards, can you explain in case someone doesn't even know what A1C is?
I'm happy to do that because, and pardon me for any kind of medical jargon. I don't want to do that. I don't like it when people do it to me. Hemoglobin A1C is the test, the kind of standard test that everybody should do at least one time after you're 40. It tells you what your blood glucose is over a period of time, like 3 months. It's an average. So it's a very reliable number on whether you're in good, healthy range or whether you're out of control, whether you're starting to drift off into diabetic range. So you want to be, I think 5.9 or 6.0 is the official cutoff, where below that you're not diabetic. And above that you are, in quotes, diabetic. I've been told, and I started out, by the way, when I started writing my book, I was, I think at 7.3. And I tell the story in the book of reducing my hemoglobin A1C to 7.0 by changing the way I ate, by stopping eating meat primarily and pumping up my veggies and tuning some other things. And my physician then, when she saw the results, which were I had reduced from 7.3 to 7.0, she said, that just doesn't happen in people your age. It just doesn't happen. And so I was thrilled. She was puzzled. And so at my latest test results, just a few days ago, 6.3, boy, that really doesn't happen. But there it is. It can happen and it does happen. And so I want everybody to think in terms of how plastic our bodies are, how manageable these chronic illnesses really are. If you make a decision and take control, decide you're going to do this, because if you wait around for somebody else to do it, it's not going to happen. And no matter what pills you, we all know this. And the more medications you take, the more complications there are likely to be. And there are side effects eventually. And there are better medications and there are worse medications. But the happy state is hardly any medications at all. That's where you want to be. I do take metformin, a small dose at night. And it's hilarious now to me that metformin has become this sort of designer drug. Everybody wants it because it's a longevity drug, supposedly. It mimics fasting in your body. And so with all of the talk now about fasting, metformin has become chic and people want it.
I did not know that people wanted metformin. Now, fasting, you know, it's hard for people to do it over a period of days.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like you have to line everything up. You have to warn your family. You have to stop everything.
But that's not what I'm talking about, Jane.
No, I know.
What I do is I do all my eating between 8, 9 in the morning and 1, 2 in the afternoon, maybe 3. So it's about a 6-hour window where I eat what I want, essentially, although I eat healthy. I mean, you know, I'm not stuffing my face with potato chips for 6 hours. I'm eating good food, just as I recommend in the book and as we've discussed, good food. And I don't cram it in. I just eat what I feel like, what I want. And then after that, hot tea. You know, I don't drink coffee in the afternoon or at night, but I could have caffeine-free tea, whatever, clear liquids, water, all I want. But, and the good news there, particularly you ladies, is no dinner dishes. It's the kitchen stays clean, which is so wonderful. But it's very hard to do around a family's schedule. If you are have kids in school or family coming in at various times, and if you're used to eating at night, you need to adapt. If you're going to do this, you need to adapt it to your life. So you might want to eat from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m. It's all of the information that I'm getting from people in this business, in the longevity sector, the research has come back saying that it's best to do your eating in the middle of the day, morning to midday, insofar as your cellular reactions are concerned. But what the takeaway message is, none of us should be eating all the time. We're not meant to be eating all the time. And we Americans, particularly, we're snackers. And we sit in front of the tube and eat pizza and watch Jimmy Kimmel or whoever until 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. And your body will adapt to that, which is another phenomenal thing. The more you study cell structure and behavior and all the crazy stuff that goes, the world inside, you know, the worlds within, we are very adaptable and very plastic. And so you can get away with a lot, but you will pay eventually if you're stressing your body continually over a long period of time in the wrong ways. Your body actually likes to be stressed in certain ways. And you'll see talk, if you're watching YouTubes about any of this, you'll see talk about dunking yourself in cold water and ice or exposing yourself to extreme heat. These kinds of stressing things that make your cells go, wait, what's going on here? But I'm not talking about that. I'm not into super stressing myself. All I'm saying is, if you look into it, you will find, especially if you are pre-diabetic or diabetic, drifting in that range, one really effective way to bring your hemoglobin A1C down, to bring your blood glucose down, is to stop stuffing your face all the time. You can still eat. You don't have to go super hungry. And it's like, it's developing new habits. And I was always told as a diabetic, you got to eat frequent meals, small meals all day long. That's what we were told. And a lot of meat and no carbs. Well, guess what? That's not right. You want to eat some carbs, but they need to be good carbs. And you don't want to eat meat particularly. A little bit is okay. High quality is okay, but not so much. And you don't want to be eating all the time. Yeah. A couple of decent meals in a day. A lot of the guys, and I say guys because I actually don't know any women who are in the longevity space big time, but the men who I see out there talking about it are very proud of themselves that they eat one meal a day. Which, okay, if it works for you, fine. But it's shocking to a lot of us to think, wait, you want me to go without food? How long? It's so interesting, though, what happens when you do this, when you try it. And I would suggest to anybody to give it a try and see what happens. Because first of all, you'd be amazed if you distract yourself. If you just go, okay, I'm hungry, but I'm not going to eat. I am going to read this thing, or I'm going to go outside and do a thing. I'm going to sing a song, anything. Distract yourself and your body will follow. It'll go, oh, okay, she's singing. She's not hungry, you know, and you will adapt. And it's kind of a miraculous thing, really, because hunger we think of as, wow, that just, you know, it's overwhelming. No, it's not. Yeah. It's okay. And what you need to know is what your body is doing while you're hungry. And I don't think we talked about this at our last session together, because I love this word so much. It's my new favorite word, autophagy, which some people pronounce autophagy. And it literally means eating self. And what it is this cellular process of, and here's what I liken it to. You open up your fridge and you look in the back of the fridge and you take the food out that's been in there long, you know, kind of looking kind of sorry, and you eat what you have. You eat the stuff that needs to be eaten. Your body, who knew, is doing the same thing. Your body is using up the old stuff in there, the trashy stuff, the stuff that's not in great shape. It's eating and using it for fuel. It's recycling your junky stuff. Isn't that fantastic? I just loved learning that. It's amazing.
The body is brilliant.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember when I was a teenager, I did intermittent fasting, but it wasn't a thing. Nobody talked about it. And I did it naturally. And I remember being on the bus and my stomach would be hungry because I wouldn't eat till 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. And you know how the breakfast is the most important meal of the day and all that. But, you know, it worked for me all my life. And when I was at naturopathic school, I tried the many little meals, and it actually, I went backwards. Like, I was gaining weight. I didn't have the energy. So I went back to my ways. And I have learned now that you should stop eating in, you know, by 3 p.m. But I just did what worked for me. And even when I had kids, I found I would feed them at 4 p.m. because they came off the bus hungry then. We would all eat right then and then stop eating the rest of the night.
Good for you.
Yeah. So that worked really well too. And the dishes were all done early. I love that.
Yes. Big bonus.
Great bonus. Yeah. And fasting raises human growth hormone, mm-hmm. right? Which is our longevity hormone, and it affects every other hormone. So yeah, I just love what you're saying about fasting.
Well, and it's such an interesting concept, Jane, to think about following our instincts when it comes to food. We've been told so many different things over the years by people who didn't really know anything about nutrition, right?
Yeah.
Because nutrition was this stepchild of a field. You know, it was just, it's like, well, if you can't afford med school or can't, you know, don't have the grades or whatever, maybe you can study nutrition. It's just, it wasn't a thing for real serious people to do. It wasn't sexy, you know, it wasn't neurosurgery. There was no money in it, was the concept. And yet, we now so clearly understand that, in fact, if we would just eat right, we wouldn't need the surgeons, right? We wouldn't even have to bother going to the hospital most of the time, because this huge number, 85-95% of the chronic diseases, which is 85-95% of the medical care being given in this country, is preventable and reversible. So why not do that? Why not do it with cabbage?
Yeah. You know? And do it. I love what you said about taking that on yourself, because no one else is going to look after you.
No.
You're the master of your own temple, and no doctor, no naturopath is there all the time. No nutritionists. So you really have to take it on and be empowered with that information.
And I just saw my physician, and my heart goes out to these folks who are trying to deliver medicine, deliver care. They're loving people who went into the field for all the right reasons, I think, in most cases. And they have 15 minutes with you.
Yeah.
Well, we were laughing, you and I, earlier about the fact we're women. 15 minutes isn't even a warm-up, because we are hardwired to communicate with one another, to talk, to look, to sniff. You know, we're creatures. We're like those bees. We are not solitary creatures. We are creatures who need one another desperately. We need to be in the company, especially us women. I mean, and that sounds sexist, but what we do as females, raising children, caring for the elders, taking care of our little flock, whatever that is, you literally cannot do it alone. It can't be done successfully alone. You must have sisters of some kind. You must have friends. And how do you have friends in 15 minutes? How, you know, and so when you go to a physician who is putting their hands on you and they're looking at you and they're giving you advice on your intimate details of your workings, how can they, and they're the whole time they're looking at the computer. They're not even looking at you. So we have this kind of, I think, misguided conception of what healthcare is, confused with what it should be, and what the folks at the hospital are left to do. I mean, you know, I wanted to just stand there and hug my doctor. It's like, honey, how is this for you? How is it to see sick people all day long and not be able to spend time with them, to sit down with them and put your hands on their knees and look in their eyes and think about their lives? I mean, and it's so humiliating to go to the doctor and you strip down and you, you know, it, just the whole way we do it is, I don't know. I'm struggling with it. And my youngest is a nurse practitioner. And so it's interesting because the nurse practitioners are the ones who actually spend more time with patients, at least in the hospital they do. You know, the doctor kind of flies through and checks some stuff and so on, and then they're off. And the nurse practitioner is the one who sits down and, you know, looks at the patient, right? Thinks about the patient, because that's just the way the structure is. But we need to talk. We really need to talk. And if you're not having good, warm, long conversations with someone, that's not healthy either.
No. Yeah. And doctors should be teacher, right?
Like you would
teaching how to do these things so that we do empower ourselves. That's what
And guess what? Yeah. We've ended up being the podcasters who are trying to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, what a funny world, right?
Yeah.
And we are thousands of miles apart, and so many people who are listening in are in who knows where, but we are in the way that we're able to, trying to reach out and touch folks and tell them that we're here.
Yeah. And that there is another way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we both saw that there needs to be a revamp somewhere that, you know, that 15 minute one pill isn't the answer in any situation.
No.
Maybe in emergencies, but beyond that, it just.
Yeah, well, and, you know, allopathic medicine, we know this, it's not news to anyone, it has its place. I mean, I just had surgery on my left hand. I'm going in soon for surgery on my right hand because. If not, they would become quite crippled because I have carpal tunnel and I, you know, problems with my hands. These are fixable things with surgery.
Yeah.
If you're healthy, if you're not healthy enough for surgery, then they can't be fixed by surgery. So even when the knife is involved, you still need to do your homework and you still need to eat the good food and you still need to get your sleep. There's no way out. You just have to do it if you're going to be healthy.
Yeah. I remember I broke a bone when I was doing trampoline, actually. And I had to go to an osteopath to get, you know, get realigned and get better. And I would come out feeling so much better. Wow. But he asked me, what's your mindset? Like so many people stay in that mindset of, oh, I'm broke, I'm hurt. And I immediately went into, I'm better. Like, I just believe I'm better. So I got better so much faster than most of the people he saw. And I've pondered that too, many times in my life.
But also an osteopath is trained very differently than surgeons.
Yeah.
For example, I've always thought it was hilarious in a way that when you go to medical school, one of the most important trainings that you get is not sleeping. They don't let you sleep.
Right. The most valuable thing.
The most valuable thing can you do to heal?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They have no experience with, because they don't know how to sleep. And it was regarded as a thing you don't want in your life. You have to learn how not to sleep. What? That's just so nutty.
A little bit backwards.
So backwards. But you wanted to talk about brownies today.
Yeah. You know what I want? I wanted you to explain why your brownies are better for breakfast than the average breakfast cereal.
Okay. First of all, ew, breakfast cereal. The problem with breakfast cereals, a couple things. It's a grain food, which is something that a lot of people, if you listen to the stories about lectins, but grains are a bit of a problem because of the way they're raised in this country and around the world. Big ag, they are not organic. They're not good for the earth, and they're very often not good for your belly. So some grains are better than others, but an easy fix for that is just kind of avoid grains. Don't eat too many grains. My brownies are made from pumpkin, which is beautiful and orange, and it's a gourd, and it is a starchy vegetable. Okay, but it's a vegetable. So pumpkin and cocoa powder, just plain old cocoa powder. Chocolate is excellent food. It's really good for you. There's politics there too. I won't get into that, but just plain old powdered cocoa. My brownies are made from nut butter. I make them with almond butter. There are other nut butters that work, but I think almond butter is one of the better ones. And almonds are happily a nut that a lot of people who have nut allergies are not allergic to. So almonds, pumpkin, cocoa, eggs or egg substitute if you're strictly vegan. I believe that eggs are really good food if you source your eggs from a chicken that you know her first name and you know she's healthy and you know that she's sleeping well at night and so on. And she's a friend. And the egg should have a nice, brilliant orange yolk. And that tells you that it's good food. So I think baking soda and sweetener. And I sweeten my brownies with monk fruit, which is a great sweetener. And there are other natural sweeteners. Chicory root is another one. And there are more coming online. Allulose is a sweetener that people are using very successfully now. Tastes great. No calories. No blood glucose response at all. But these are newer sweeteners, or old in the case of monk fruit, but it wasn't on the market much until recently. And you're going to find that they're great. And there's no aftertaste, you know, that erythritol is one that is in a lot of sweeteners. It will have a slight cooling effect in some baked goods, but with a dark cocoa thing, you don't get that effect at all. So these brownies are great food. They're protein, they're fiber, their vitamins, minerals, great food as compared to Cocoa Puffs. I mean, what? I've been through the cereal aisle looking, and I was down on my hands and knees and looked at every single cereal. Especially I was looking for a healthy whole grain granola kind of cereal. None of them were made without sugar. They all had not just one kind of sugar, but two or three kinds of sugar in them. So there's a whole aisle that you can just now not bother with. Don't go there.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there for you.
Right. I know. And it's been just commercially sold as good for you for breakfast.
There's money in it. It's cheap for them to make. But also look at all the packaging that you won't be buying and all the advertising that, you know, it's like, just walk away. You don't need any of it. Your kids don't need it. And your kids can make these brownies, by the way. And if they make the brownies, they're going to be so proud of themselves, and they will eat them and brag about them and share them. And there are other recipes in my book as well, because the whole idea is you shouldn't be feeding your kids one thing and your husband another thing and your grandma another thing. I want you all sitting together and eating good food together. Yeah. I mean, maybe once a day, if that's all you manage, that's still, that's great if you can do it. Yeah. But I hate this idea of the kid with the pizza and his electronics in the other room eating while you sit with your tea and that you're, that's.
Yeah. And one of the things I've always, as a naturopath, tried to get across is how good a food is how quickly it'll turn to sugar in your body. Right? So your brownies are complex. They've got protein, they've got plant-based, they've got minerals, they've got all these things that your body is going to, you know, slowly use. And so you'll have this long energy from it.
Yeah. It's not a blast.
Right. So tell us about the blast that comes.
Well, and I also want to talk about though, that the fact that there's this huge difference in how your body processes dense proteins like meat and plant proteins like a nut butter and like the other stuff in the brownies. And here's another great word. I love it. Putrefaction. Mm. All right. We know what that means already. That's what happens in your gut when you eat meat and in your colon. Meat products move very, and by the way, I'm not strictly vegan. Let's get that straight. But I support vegans. I'm all about it. It's a great way to eat if you do it in a healthy way. Nothing wrong with it. I eat some fish. And if someone prepared for me a dish that was made out of a grass-finished, grass-fed beef, I might taste some, but I'm not used to it anymore. I don't eat red meats anymore, pork or lamb or any of those. So what happens is it actually takes your body 18, 20 hours or more to go through the process of digesting a meat. If it's a plant-based food, it's out of there in a few hours, sometimes a few minutes. I mean, they're a wholly different thing to your body and they move. And so this is one of the health benefits actually, is they don't get stuck in your body. And as you know, Jane, it's all about your microbiome being happy. Mm. We have to make our microbiomes happy. And it's a very individual thing. Mine is different than yours. My kids are, everybody's microbiomes are different, are very individual. But there are certain things that are just nasty for everybody and pretty good for everybody. So think about your microbiome when you eat. And no, those cereals are not good for your microbiome. Any kind of a super fast acting, like you're saying, a refined sugar, a blast is like throwing a little grenade in your body because everybody has to, oh my gosh, let's, you know, respond to this. And your blood sugar goes up and your blood pressure goes up and everything, all the alarms go off.
So you're getting a very quick sugar source.
Right. But and then you crash.
Yeah. And then you crash because right. there's nothing else there. It's right. like a very.
Right. Your body is designed to turn foods into glucose. And when you hit it with glucose that's already glucose, it has a different system that it has to employ. And what it wants to do is turn food into glucose. So, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting stuff coming out at the cellular level now. There's a lot of interesting studying going on, fascinating stuff. And we can talk about that more next time.
Okay. Another thing people ask me is, you know, so you're talking about eating foods that aren't high in sugar, and they'll ask me about fruit. And last time we talked, you said berries are the superfood. And I agree. Tell us about berries, why they're the best. If you're going to eat fruit, it's like
Well, they've got everything. They've got that beautiful dark red color that tells you that they're polyphenols. And, you know, let's see, where do we start with berries? They're high in fiber. They're very low in calories. So the glucose in berries comes with this package that makes them a slower burn in your body. And they have all these antioxidants that you're hearing about all the time that are protective and important in your system. And you know that if we're going to be really radically strict about what we eat and super healthy, you only eat fruit in season. I mean, and this is what Ayurveda tells us, and this is what a lot of the ancients would tell us. But this is a thing nobody does anymore, because you can go in the market and buy cherries or, I don't know, nectarines or whatever from Chile or all these other places in the world. So no one has a real high awareness of when foods are not in season. But for maximum health, it's certainly worthwhile to think about what you're eating according to the calendar. Is this time to eat berries? Berries have a long season, by the way. They're starting here where I am now, pretty soon. And I love berries because they're free. They just grow right everywhere. And you don't need to do a thing to them. So they're this great, wild, natural, like mushrooms that you gather in the forest. You know, they are food that has not been messed with. They are what's the word? Primal food. And they're the food that feeds the trees and the bears and you. So berries are kind of magic. Plus they freeze very well. And I do have them in my freezer, and I cheat a little bit and eat berries for a longer season because I love them all the time. But fruit, if you're going to be absolutely all about your health, you don't want to eat a lot of fruit. You know, you really don't. You want to eat fruit in season, and berries, anything dark red, is they're among the best things you can eat. But when it's time, there are 2 weeks in June when the Blenheim apricots come in and are ripe. And you will know where I am. I will be the first one in line when the truck arrives at Sagonis Produce with the Blenheim apricots, and I will be right there. And I will be eating them all the way home because they're amazing. And where I live in Northern California, in the Silicon Valley, I'm right over the hill on the coast, but this used to all be Blenheim apricots. It was the Valley of Heart's Delight. And it was, when I was a kid, it was all orchards. And now you have to know a guy at the produce market in order to get your Blenheim apricots. And they are fabulous. They're so sweet and complex and wonderful. Nothing like most apricots that are sold in the store. They're kind of small and ugly. They're not glamorous and huge, but they're so good. So.
And if you pay attention, right, to when they come ripe, that's the time that your body needs them. Yes. Like some of the high vitamin C fruit come ripe in the fall, and that's when we need to store vitamin C. And it's just so fascinating.
It is fascinating. We have pears and apples that come, the apples are first, and then the pears are kind of the last thing. And then when the pears are off the trees, you know, weather's changing, and it's going to be, even in California, people don't think of California that way, but it's very seasonal here in Northern California. So yes. And then in the fall, I'm stuffing my face with the pears that come off our trees, which we don't even know what kind they are. There's some old heritage pear that was developed before the pears were bred to be hardy in shipping. These pears bruise easily. They're like, oh, no. They are so sweet and so good, so amazing. And so I dry them and I give them to my friends. Fruit is not a thing you should just be eating all the time.
No, right? In season. And I always found it interesting in Canada, apples and potatoes would come last and you could store them in a cold place for a long time, right? To help them through the winter. Yeah.
And potatoes bring up another thing, which there are a lot of people in the nutrition space that will tell you to avoid nightshade plants, and potatoes being one of them. And also, I don't know, you can name them all.
Nightshades. Yeah. Like, red peppers are a nightshade.
Peppers, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so what
and
is it?
Eggplant.
About? Eggplant, yeah.
Right. But it's interesting that and red peppers are an exception to that. But as a diabetic, I didn't eat a lot of, I mean, I never ate potatoes much at all. And
just because of the starch. Like how quick they would turn to sugar. Yeah.
Right. So it isn't a part of my routine anyway, but yeah, there are plenty of people who will tell you to avoid nightshade vegetables anyway.
Yeah. So. Yeah. They don't really bother me, but I have several patients that they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So should we talk about one more favorite recipe that you could share?
Which
talks
one?
About this complexity. Maybe something for lunch. Your favorite soup.
I will talk about my favorite soup, but I'll also talk about what I had for breakfast this morning, okay. Which was coleslaw, which, oh. I mean, if anyone had told me as a kid that my favorite food as an adult would wind up being purple cabbage, I go, what? Right. You know, come on. But if you will make yourself a batch of coleslaw out of the book. And I think I offer, but you can make it with an oil and vinegar dressing, or you can use like a vegenaise kind of mayonnaise type dressing on it too. But I just keep a bowl of that in the fridge all the time. And if you take a piece of really good whole grain sourdough toast and put an egg or egg whites on top of it, also a bunch of coleslaw and some crumbled goat cheese and a little bit of smoky salt and pepper. It is so good for breakfast. It's the crunchy on top of the toast with the eggs or egg whites and then a little bit of goat cheese.
Mm. Oh, and I'm hungry. That sounds so good.
And, you know, or lunch. It doesn't have to be breakfast. But it's really interesting when you start incorporating vegetables in every meal. You all of a sudden your horizons expand. I mean, why in the world would you want cereal if you could have crumbled goat cheese on a beautiful fresh coleslaw made with purple cabbage and green cabbage and a little bit of carrots, and I do put a little bit of finely chopped red pepper. But if that doesn't agree with you, just leave that out. I just love it for the color, and it's a little bit more flavor. But it's addictive. I mean, you know, and I also do, and I want to talk a little bit about fermented foods because y'all know. Yeah. Fermented foods are great for you. And this is not a recipe in the book, but make yourself a grilled sandwich with coleslaw in it and a piece of non-dairy cheese that melts it all together and glues it together. It's really good. You know, sauerkraut sandwich. Who knew, right? So good.
Right. And you haven't even made it into sauerkraut. It's the coleslaw is just oil and vinegar. Salt and pepper.
So cabbage is a brilliant, brilliant food, and it comes in these different forms. And so coleslaw is one, sauerkraut is another. If you want to steam it, if you want to broil it, there are just so many ways that you can cook it, and it's yummy, and throw it in anything. And soup. And the other recipe we should talk about is genius soup, because it's such a great thing to make once a week or once every couple of weeks and use up all that stuff in your fridge that use up all those greens in your fridge. The soup is very simple. You use carrots, celery, and onions the way a French grandma, Italian grandma would, and you chop them and you saute them. And then you dump in some broth. I just use vegetable broth, more water. And then I open up the fridge and I pull out the wilting spinach, the collard greens, the cabbage, any greens that you have, dandelions, anything that you have, dump it in and it cooks down, you know, it, and you're making this nutrient dense soup from all these genius foods. And then when it's all cooked, you season it up or you can season it as you're cooking. I'll use French herbs, you know, the herbe de Provence that we've all got sitting in our shelf, salt, pepper, and then season it however you want. You can make it hot. You can use Chinese sauces. You can use Mexican sauces. I've got one in my fridge now. It's Peruvian ahi sauce. It's delicious. But it's a base for all these different meals. Because, yeah, you need to have a system so you're not cooking all the time. We don't want to be standing in the kitchen cooking all the time. But you have to cook sometime. So make it count. Make a great soup that you can just keep eating different ways and throw pasta in it, throw beans in it.
Yeah. It's good. And it can last a few days. You can freeze it.
Absolutely. You can freeze it, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, love it.
Pull it out when you need it. Yeah, really good.
That is just brilliant. I love it.
It's genius, Jay.
It's genius. Very good. So how do people get your book?
Well,
just remind us.
Anywhere they buy books, Amazon. But if it's your independent bookseller, I want you to go and ask for it. That helps me because that helps create demand. And I want you to do a little scene. You go, okay, you don't have it? It's blowing up. Everybody wants it. You need to get this book and see if they'll stock it. But they will order it for you from their wholesaler, a company called Ingram Spark. And so the book is being carried by this wholesaler that sells to everybody. But you can just order online if you want to. And I would encourage you to do that. It comes in a paperback, hardback. You can download it. But I really am hoping you'll have it open on your countertop all the time and just keep turning the page going, wow, let's make that or let's make that. We tried hard, the designer, Elise Huffman, and I tried hard to make it beautiful so you would like looking at it and like having it out and using it because food should be beautiful and fun.
Yeah. And we all need to be reminded, right? We get busy and you look in your fridge and you've got, oh, I've got nothing to eat.
Nothing we do is more important. I mean, yeah. And we've sort of shoved it aside, you know, as a thing that just doesn't matter anymore. You just grab something and you eat it, but nothing is more important. And it's not going to be healthy if you don't cook it.
Yeah.
Is the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. I loved our time together again, Lynn. Thank you so much.
Such
a pleasure.
It's a regular thing because, yeah, I need to check up on you and see how the move is going.
Let's do it again.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much. And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up.
And remember, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. You can find more inspiring episodes on 14 different platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, and empoweredhealth.com. Be a part of Thrive Tribes. Be the change in Thrivevolution at thrivetribehub.com. And join me and my fellow changemakers at Health Tribe, Body, Mind, and Soul on Facebook. Spiral up, spiral out.